Route 616, your home for all fans of Marvel main continuity. The three of us are back to record the podcast once again. Pretty incredible.
I'm surprised Dan isn't wearing a Barca shirt today.
You know what? I was planning to put it on and I forgot.
Well, that happens okay. You when you're old. Into your third century.
What? No, I was actually planning to put it on, and I did forget.
I know, I that wasn't a joke. I was honestly expecting you to be wearing the Barca jersey, because you've been shit-talking about that all day.
Well, the worst part is they'll probably lose. Yeah, but, you know what that
Dan's a pretty
I don't know.
Bad friend
it's
taunting
Italian
me while
football,
I'm at work.
Or Spanish football, I don't care.
Yeah. It's just, he's wearing that. And
whose fault is that? Who bought them it?
I felt bad
yeah.
for him. I figured he wouldn't get the joke.
Well, to be fair, what was Dan going to do? Give me a Wolves jersey? Like,
yeah, well, to
not
be
in
fair,
Nova Scotia.
They're so used to people laughing and pointing at them that they wouldn't realize it was the jersey that they were wearing that was, you know, causing that reaction.
Yeah, not really any difference to me.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Oh, yeah, yeah. Cream there a little bit, buddy. You know, puff it up. Puff it up. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I went into the soccer shop today. And was looking at some
yeah,
of
no,
stuff.
You got the Malaga shirt. Hat.
The
That's hard to pronounce.
It is. Malaga. Whatever. Or Milga.
I would have just gone Milga.
At least now you get to know my pain that my United hat happens to be MAGA red.
Oh, I know. It's. I mean, I couldn't resist. It's a great hat. It's like a nice hat.
It's a good hat. It's just, it's an unfortunate color.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. They actually, I was talking to the guy who, you know, was selling the release. He was saying they had made hats for Valley United and they had to stop making them because they were, of course, in bright red. Because that's Valley United's colors, and he said, you know, they just had to stop selling them because, you know, nobody wanted to buy them because they were bright red.
Oh yeah, when my hat was new, and I was wearing it around town, I got people yelling at me and stuff until they saw the big United crest on the front, and then they're like, "Oh, it's a sports thing," and calmed down. But they just assumed I was the type of person that would wear a MAGA hat in a different country at first.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I really want to wear the Liverpool hat, but I'm just...
You're running an even higher risk, because it has words on it. Mine at least has a big old crest that doesn't look anything like it when you see it from the front.
I suppose Manchester words are difficult.
I walked into that, but the point needed to be made, so I kept going.
Yeah, no, your point is well taken. But the truth is, like I said, I love the hat. It's a great design and everything. But oh boy!
I think I'm going to be buying more merch in the away colors.
Yeah. Oh, they got a gorgeous Liverpool jersey there right now. But it's just like, I want to buy this so bad. But
please tell me it's the bright yellow with the red writing on it, because that thing was hideous, and I would mock you incessantly if you bought it.
No, it's the one of their new one of the new practice jerseys.
Okay, those are
really
actually good.
Nice. Yeah, they just pick the right colors all the time,
except for that yellow jersey.
Except for the yellow one. Although I don't take criticism from you because you guys have the baby poop brown and the roadkill jerseys, so.
And neither one of those are our worst third jersey.
I'm trying to think what your worst third jersey would be. There's a lot.
This year's when paired with the socks.
Oh god.
I'm
pretty sure the Glazier's new plan is to just make the jerseys so hideous that no one looks at the team and therefore doesn't see what they're doing.
I don't know if that's going to work.
But, is the practice one you're talking about turquoise color?
No, it was funny. It was weird black and white or something.
Black with gold?
I thought it was a Newcastle jersey the first time I saw it. Yeah.
Spoilers, Dan's actually just looking at our third jersey from this year.
No, I haven't looked it up yet. I want to look it up now.
I actually like Liverpool's third jersey. I just saw that.
The green one? Or the...
No, it was like purplish with white stuff.
Oh, that
maybe
one,
it's
yeah.
a different year's.
I think that's last year's.
Yeah, might that was been. Last year.
That one wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was nice.
It came up in my result, so I was trying to figure out what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, this year they have the white with the green squares on it, which is somewhat sus.
Yeah,
it's not one of your better ones. It's not awful, but it's not one of your best.
No, it's not. Definitely not one of the best.
So, I mean, anything in pop culture? I mean, I guess the Spider-Man 2 game's out, but none of us are playing it.
I need to play Spider-Man 1 and Miles Morales before I play it.
True. Highly recommend. I haven't played Miles still.
It's one of those games that's been on my 2 playlist forever.
It's so good,
and I've
the first
just never
one.
Gotten around to it. I mean, I've
so
seen
good.
The entire game through.
I mean, Moira loves it. Moira's been playing the second one all week.
Yeah.
I'm mostly just worried about the side stuff getting repetitive.
Even the side stuff's pretty fun. Dan's yawning because it's Spider-Man.
No, I'm just tired. But have we any predictions for the Man City versus Man U?
Man City destroys. Sorry,
yeah. You 100%.
You want to do some shit talking beforehand, Bill?
No, I'm not even going to try to talk up that we have chances against City. We are embarrassingly bad this year.
So this year isn't going to be your year?
It is not.
This is not the year?
This is not the year, holy shit. We're worse than Wolves this year.
Wow.
That's an indictment if I've ever heard one.
I'm not sure that was a compliment.
That's an indictment if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
And to be clear, that is not me being sour grapes. That was literally a talking point of the commentators during the Brighton game last week, was that Wolves have 2 more goals than United this year.
That's funny. I didn't fact check it because
I figured the commentators usually have their facts right.
Oh yeah.
So I just went with it.
I kind of didn't believe it was real fact at first.
Wolves did beat Man City. I mean, nobody else has done that this year.
Wolves are scrappy, but they weren't expected to score this year, whereas we were expected to score until Rashford decided to just not play.
Yeah, well, if you could get Sancho on the field, you'd be all right.
Yeah, unfortunately, him and Ten Hag are just digging it deeper.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a thing today where they wanted him to reproduce an opposition style.
Pretty wild.
Drill.
Pretty wild ass.
Oh, Bill.
When we're done being 6,
never gonna happen.
Fair enough.
Never gonna happen.
TNA.
But they wanted him to reproduce the style of one of the opposition teams they're gonna play during drills, so they could practice against it.
Yeah.
And he already knew that he wasn't gonna play in the game, so he just didn't do it and got into a big shouting match with Ten Hag again. So I think he's probably on his way out of the club.
Well, I think that's a given. Right. I think they were planning to replace him a week, like 2 weeks ago. Right, get him out of there.
Yeah.
Because
it's
he's
just
going
with
back.
Him constantly blowing up at the club on social media, he's making himself very hard to sell, too, because who wants to bring that in?
Yeah.
That's a very, very United Finn to do.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Although... I have
you guys
to be, crow and
you guys
admit Harry was probably right.
What, you guys be
because that stat I sent you
month?
Was old. We're up to 18 of 19 of his last starts we've won.
As hard as he tried, you still won.
He scored the goal in the Copenhagen game.
That is true. It bounced off his ass or something.
It was a header.
Okay, so it bounced off his face.
Oh, that would have been better, because he still has a pouty face that I kind of want to punch, but
Yeah,
I'm having to admit that he seems to be back on form.
Well, that's not good.
Maybe he was motivated by almost getting booted.
Maybe. Dude. I mean, he's still too slow. We need someone faster.
He's so slow.
His head's back in the game. That's counting for a lot.
That's really not good. Because...
the fact that we need him...
3 years in Maguire, in form...
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, like, the fact that we need him...
This is not something
you're
bragging about.
Oh, I'm not. The fact that we need him is a damning indictment of the state of that team right now.
Yeah. Okay, we've been going on about football for 10 minutes. We haven't even gotten near the comics.
No, that's just very saying. Much this podcast, though.
Yeah. Beyond that, has anybody seen The Exorcist Believers yet?
Of course not.
Okay. I'm waiting until it comes out and I can rent it because I don't expect it to be good enough to pay theater prices.
Yeah,
I didn't even watch the Halloween movie I said I was going to watch on the last film we recorded.
That's probably for the best.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, I did watch Exorcist Believer.
Okay. What'd you think of it? Without spoilers,
I'm
I guess.
I'm reading Dan's face. Mm. It was not good.
I'm guessing you loved it.
The trailer locks.
No! No way. Never happens.
It was nowhere near as good as the trailer made it look. Not the worst film I've seen this year. Definitely not the worst film I've seen this year. But boy, oh boy.
Well, of course, you probably watched Rob Zombie's Halloween this year.
Do I look desperate? Right. I mean, if Evil Dead Rise was exceeding expectations by a particular magnitude, Exorcist Believer kind of went in the opposite direction. Nowhere near as good as I saw. The trailer looks so good.
It does look good, but I've been burned so many times by Exorcist movies. There have been two good ones.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, I had my hopes up so high because Evil Dead Rise was so much better than I thought it was going to be. And I thought, maybe the studios have finally got this figured out. No.
It's like I was saying last week with franchises, though. It's kind of a problem because you only really have two options. Do the same thing again, or just do something completely different, and then people will get mad that it's not really part of the franchise.
Well, yeah. The thing is, I don't think you want to get Taika Waititi to direct an Exorcist movie.
Oh, God, no. I didn't realize he was the director. If I had known that, I would have just not even had it on my Major Rant.
No, he's not.
That was a joke.
That was aimed at the Thor Blood and Thunder, or whatever the fuck it was. that one, right? The Blood and Thunder. God, what a bad movie.
See, normally I would have taken that as a joke, but it sounds like something the studios would do.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, no.
It doesn't always go wrong. Who would have thought Peter Jackson was capable of directing, a serious movie based off of his New Zealand output?
Yeah, based on his previous... Did you ever see the one he did with the puppets?
I didn't see that one, but I've seen the one about eating aliens, and I saw Black Sheep.
Yeah, Black Sheep I loved.
I loved both of those, but they're not the sort of thing that makes you think this is a director who can be a serious Oscar contender.
No, but he did such an incredible job in Lord of the Rings. I mean, it was a failure on a literary level, right? For Lord of the Rings fans, it was a bit of a struggle to love it. But for people who weren't familiar with Lord of the Rings, it was just epic.
I just realized I made a horrible mistake.
You're going to have to narrow that down.
I referenced Peter Jackson in a conversation with Dan. Yeah. Starter Comics, quick, Ryan, before he gets going on all of the perceived failings of Lord of the Rings.
I was going to go back to Taika for a second.
Back up, Bruce. Perceived failings? Perceived?
Concern how Blockbuster hits those where, yeah, that's... The numbers don't really lie in that sense. But anyways, I don't care for any of that anyway. I was going to say how Taika fell off really fast, did like two or three good movies, and doesn't do anything good anymore.
Yeah, Taika's just lost it completely. Like,
I don't know what happened
there. Blood and Thunder, but... I could accept as like an aberration. And even like the tonal shifts in the previous Thor movie, I can accept people not... Yeah, I can accept like not liking that, not thinking it's good.
Except people but, being Dan's, I guess.
Yes, but he's not doing anything good anymore.
That's what I keep hearing. I haven't watched any of this stuff, but nobody likes any of his new stuff.
No, it's bad.
It's not good. It's not good. It's not entertaining at all.
How is like, that the same man that made Jojo Rabbit?
Yeah, it's like Ragnarok and Jojo Rabbit, and then...
What was that one? Old or something?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was horrible. It was just so bad. Right, but I mean... No, that was...
And even Jojo Rabbit, it took me like half the movie to fully start getting into it.
It's a tough one to get into because it's so transgressive with the subject matter. Like, you start off and you're just super uncomfortable that the protagonist loves Hitler.
Yeah.
Right. And has, like, an imaginary Hitler that hangs around.
But it turns out to be really good, and then there's
it's fantastic.
Some good emotional moments in there.
That mental block of, like,
yeah,
this is Nazi shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, M. Night Shyamalan, the Ding Dong, did the same thing. He had one good movie, and everything he's done since has been absolute shite. You know, so...
Yeah, obviously you're talking about The Village.
and The Happening, and...
Watched that in theaters.
I was making a joke about the one good movie.
Yeah.
The Village Elevator, is far from his worst movie.
I just couldn't think of all of them.
Better
the twist is bad.
It's horrible.
But up until that's revealed, it's actually a pretty competently done movie.
It was just the first one I thought of.
Yeah, he's just done so, The Happening was so bad.
The Happening is bad all the way through.
Yeah, and
The Village started strong and then fell off when they brought in the modern day
middle,
stuff.
Start, middle, and bad.
Yeah.
Shit. Oh.
We scared him off.
There we go.
Okay.
I was going to say, quick start Spider-Man while he's not here.
Oh my God, it's Spider-Man.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry, I bumped my microphone. I think I disconnected something.
We'll see how long that we want to, but... I think it's about time we get to the comics, though, now that we're slowing down on that.
Killing everything else. I did rewatch Wednesday, though.
Oh, this,
of course. Again, since last week, or are you just talking about that again?
I'm just talking about last. Yeah, but it was definitely worth it.
Okay, because much like your Taika Waititi joke, that was entirely plausible.
Oh, I suppose. No, I'm starting Stranger Things. Finally, after 5 years or whatever, I've decided.
Longer than that.
Decided to start Stranger Things, so
it's really good.
It is
I know it's good, but
season 2 is a little rough.
I
still haven't finished 4.
Season 3, I thought, was where they started having like
season 2
thematic issues.
Season 1 is brilliant once you get. The first episode's a little, but once you get going, it's brilliant. Season 2 is really, like, half of it's pretty kind of getting to shit, and half it's all right. Season three is pretty good again. At least, like, the first two or three of season three aren't the best, but then it gets really good again. Yeah. And then four I haven't finished fully, so I'm in the middle of, like, episode two. So
yeah,
can't comment on that one. But it's I've heard it's brilliant, though.
Okay, so.
Yeah, we have comics, I guess.
Yeah, let's actually talk about stuff we're supposed to talk about.
I don't really want to talk about this one, to be honest, but...
no one does.
Yeah, that's why we gave
it to
Dan.
But look at it this way. Talking about it is better than reading it.
That's true. At least we can
talk
shit about
it. Are we talking about Spider-Man again?
Avengers number 18, titled When the Commissar Commands. Stan Lee wrote this, of course. Don Heck on art. Dick Ayers on inks. The best parts of this issue. Jack Kirby and Dick Ayers on cover.
Even that wasn't up to its normal level.
No, it wasn't. Letters by Artie Simek. May 1965 release date. 20-page story. And good old Dan will take this one. Not by choice.
Spider-Man ain't looking so bad now, is he?
At least it might be funnier this way that Dan gets to experience this with us.
Well, the thing is, this is fairly brief, so it shouldn't be too painful. And no.
I wish the comic was fairly brief.
Nothing is worse than Spider-Man, okay? Okay, so here we go.
We'll put a point in that and come back to it after you've described this issue to us.
Okay.
The synopsis might be too brief, we'll see.
We'll see. The synopsis for When the Commissar Commands. Don't turn around. Uh-oh. The Avengers receive a distress call from the communist state of Sin Kong, which is being ruled by a giant monkey. Oh, no, sorry. By the cruel commissar. Oh, definitely a Stan Lee story.
I mean, he kind of looks like a shaved ape, so...
Yeah. They leave to help, but are attacked by the commissar's troops on arrival. The troops are defeated, but the Scarlet Witch falls into a trap and is taken captive.
That's all right, I'm going to stop you there because okay. They already omitted something that makes this story worse.
Oh, goody.
The Avengers just didn't randomly learn that this country was under communist control by this guy. They got a distress signal from the alleged resistance asking them to come help, and it was actually just a commissar luring them into a trap so that he could defeat them and prove the superiority of communism.
Communism number one.
Yeah. Because that makes this all better.
Oh no, it makes it worse, but I want people to understand how truly crappy this comic is.
Okay. The other Avengers have to fight one-on-one with the Commissar to save the Scarlet Witch. Captain America, Hawkeye, and Quicksilver are all bested. Well, that's whatever. The Scarlet Witch then insists...
An average Tuesday, Avengers... you ask me.
Yeah. That's... Oh, wow. The Scarlet Witch then insists that the Avengers are defeated as she hasn't fought him yet. Using her hex power, she reveals that the Commissar is a robot and short-circuits him. Sing Kong is then liberated. And that's literally the entire thing.
Oh, they cut so much crap from that. She doesn't figure out he's a robot. Captain America figures out she's a robot. Figures out he's a robot. And then sets her up to fight him to reveal it after Captain America has already lost the fight himself.
Oh, okay.
So, because you can't have the woman coming up with good ideas. This is the 60s after all.
Yeah, so the most powerful superhero in the Marvel universe is the one defeated and captured. And then the three other superheroes who are about as useful as tits on a bull, lose to him, and then she just magically, and I use this word,
yes.
He magically defeats him.
Yes.
Well, they're just making her powers up on the spot right now. She has, like, no real set powers for really, when you actually
read
these comics.
Yeah, her powers at this point are 50s magician, which means she can do whatever the hell she wants, as the plot demands. and her weakness is the dreaded Y chromosome, which she lacks, and therefore she can get defeated at a whim whenever they need a damsel in distress.
Okay.
Yeah. The synopsis didn't do this one justice. This comic was pretty shitty. I didn't hate this fully because there was some moments. It's funny because the team dynamic is the worst and best part of this lineup at the same time because it gets annoying because there's too many dicks on one team. But it's also like the best part of the comic because the rest of it sucks.
Yeah.
So
that's why I didn't hate the team dynamic in this issue. In future issues, I start to hate it because the villains get slightly better. I mean, we escalate to, like, Mole Man levels.
Oh, goody. What a real treat.
Can't wait.
Yeah, me neither. Ooh.
Well, let's move on. Give your rating, and let's get the hell off of this.
2 stars. Like I said, I didn't
two
hate
stars.
It, so...
Low 2 stars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The site average is, like, 2.16, which is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty rare for a comic to dip below 1 on this site. If you're doing the main order, I should specify, because reading the expanded orders for the 1950s, comics not getting 1-star ratings is a rarity.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, moving forward.
Moving quickly along.
To Dan's favorite comic, Amazing Spider-Man number 28. This one's titled The Menace of the Molten Man. Dan's like, no! Please! No. Of course, Stan Lee and Steve Ditko doing all the work besides Sam Rosen, who's on letters. June 1965 release date on this one, 20-page story, and I will let Bill have all the fun here.
Alright. As the school year comes to a close, Peter Parker is getting the cold shoulder from Liz Allen, but so is Flash Thompson without any explanation. Graduation day is coming soon, so Peter is let out of school early and he pays a visit to Spencer Smite, creator of the robot. They don't specify which robot, but it's the one from last issue that Jonah had.
It wasn't even last issue, it was like 3 issues ago now.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, we covered it last week, but it was the third last issue, because there was the two-parter of Grandmaster in between.
You're right, that was after that, wasn't it?
Continuity, Ryan!
Yes. Even though the robot grabs Peter, he talks his way out of it and quickly exchanges Spider-Man outfits to get his real one back. Just as he finishes, he notices a commotion between Smite and Mac Raxton over a liquid metal alloy. And here I'm going to make a continuity point. They started this comic off with it being a big deal that he gets his real suit back. But at the end of the Crime Master arc, he made himself a new suit. He doesn't need this one back.
Yeah?
There's a point that needs to be made. Who cares?
Not Stan.
Certainly not Dan, who didn't even witness the last few issues either.
Yeah, he missed his boy getting white liquid in the face by Peter. And then he sent us the picture randomly later.
I don't know how that happened. How Dan picked out the one that
I'm pretty sure he got the picture because I was harassing him with it earlier.
No, oddly enough, it came up in my news feed. For some reason... This showed up.
It came up.
Feed.
Weirdly, it came up in my For You tab.
Right? It's like
it came up in Peter's trousers shortly before the white liquid went over Jonah.
Oh, I'm just scrolling through nude woman art. Jerry Jonah Jameson.
This is what I really came for.
Oh, here's the good shit.
Say my name, Jonah. Say my name. Sorry.
This podcast took a twisted turn.
And Pastebot Pete wasn't even here to get us off topic this time.
No.
What a comment. I would be Pastebot Pete versus J. Jonah Jameson.
I'd read that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. A greedy and impatient Raxton intends to sell it, and Smite fights back, saying more testing needs to be done. As Peter goes to help, the robot grabs him, and he watches as Smite is struck down... jar of liquid metal alloy spills onto Raxton. Raxton leaves for a hospital and, lost in thought, is almost hit by a car. When he lashes out, he realizes his strength and decides on a life of crime. To be fair, this is less unbelievable than most people that get superpowers and decide to become criminals, because he was already trying to rob Smite, so he was already on that path.
Okay.
Spider-Man confronts Raxton and begins to battle him, taking extremely hard blows due to Raxton's new body of metal. Spider-Man knocks the lights out. Oh, okay, they missed a section here.
Okay, that just means
he goes to Raxton's house after him and gets into another fight with him there. He starts fighting him in the street, loses him, and then goes to his house and starts fighting with him again there, which is why he can turn the lights out on him. It's not just that he somehow managed to extinguish the sun in the middle of the street.
Okay.
Spider-Man knocks the lights out and in the dark ties up Raxton's hands and feet with super thick webbing and leaves him for the police. Peter Parker attends his graduation and unfortunately J. Jonah Jameson is the guest speaker. After a tedious speech, Peter decides to catch up with Liz Allen as Jameson butters up Aunt May to retain Parker's photography skills. Liz professes her feelings to Peter and says she felt she was seen as a ditzy blonde and that she never had a chance with Betty or Mary Jane around. Liz says it's time for that part of her to graduate and leave behind, and leaves before Peter can say a thing. And that's it.
Oh, thank God it's over. We're done?
Yep.
Yeah. It was good, but not as good as the Spider-Man issue should be, in my opinion. Because Bill disagrees with me.
The villain, not good. The stuff around Peter's life was really good in this issue.
That's true. My issue was with Molten Man more than anything. I didn't think Molten Man was good at all here.
He's not interesting, but he's not worse than a lot of 60s villains.
That's not necessarily untrue.
So I didn't, like, he wasn't bad enough for me to start docking points for him sucking.
I struggled.
He was just a strong guy for Peter to fight with.
Well, it seemed like that they didn't fully know what they were going for with him. And it just, I don't know.
I didn't find that in this issue. I find that in the next time he shows up. But here his power set is pretty defined. He's tough to grab a hold of because he's slippery for some reason. And he's super strong. And fairly invulnerable because he's covered in metal.
Yeah, I don't think, like, he's called Molten Man, but I don't think they actually, like why is he called Molten Man?
Oh,
I don't
because
think they
it's
nailed that down
name.
This issue.
It's a dumb name, but the power set was consistent here, and it clearly was what they were intending, because the story made perfect sense. It wasn't Stan misunderstanding because he wasn't talking to Steve. Like, it's too coherent for that, so it is what they intended. He's just a bad villain.
I mean, it's not like he's ever really a great villain, but I was hoping for a little bit more competency.
I think part of the problem is Spider-Man tends to have really good villains. The majority of the villains they've created in this comic are above average, so when we get just average, strong, hard-to-hurt guy, he seems really boring by comparison. Because I'm pretty sure if we got that Molten Man in, like, a Human Torch story or something, he'd be completely fine.
Hell, I would have taken that Molten Man in The Last Avengers.
Yeah, he's better than the Commissar.
That's a fair point, too. Like I said, I still like the Spider-Man. I gave it a 3, but
I gave it a 3 as well. I just, like, I lean more on the high side of the 3.
Yeah, obviously mine was on lower, so...
Yeah. And I have to call out the cover. This is a cool cover for this issue.
It is a good cover. I kind of meant to point that out earlier, but forget it.
Could be more Jonah Jameson.
Well, that's also
not according
fair, to
that
honest.
Speech. Because that wasn't my commentary. That was a major plot point of the story, that Jonah's speech was painfully boring and he would not shut up.
Yeah, I can't believe they buried Jonah like that.
It was one of my favorite parts of the comic because Jonah is one of my favorite characters in that. Precisely because he's arrogant and self-centered and kind of a shithead. And so to just have him go full Jonah at the graduation, make it all about himself, was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then he starts flirting with Aunt May to try to get Peter to stay because he's worried that Peter's leaving for the other newspaper.
That was really good. That was the best part of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that was hilarious. The reference
back to the newspaper thing.
Yeah, especially because Aunt May has terrible taste in men, so she probably liked it.
Oh, God.
Okay, that's not so bad. For some reason, I remembered there being more writing on that.
Yeah, no, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It means nothing to anybody around here.
But when you meet the one that either recognizes it or calls you a dirty scouse...
Okay, I meet anybody that calls me a scouser, I'm going to laugh. But that would be funny.
That would be really funny.
Genuinely funny.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's move on to...
to Ryan. Okay.
Let's move on to Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos number 21. This one's titled, To Free a Hostage.
Well, you're skipping some there. Oh, no, you're not. Never mind. That's right.
I was like, what are you talking about?
I always get lost by that because it's in the other row of comics.
Yeah.
And in this time, I didn't notice right away because, spoilers, the next main order comic we have is also Fury.
Yes. But yeah, this one's written, of course, by Stan Lee. Art by Dick Ayers. Inks by Carl Hubbell. Interesting.
No idea who that is.
Me neither. Dick Ayers on the cover. Artie Simic on letters.
He inks some Western stuff and a couple other Furies.
Yeah, a couple other Furies.
But it's mostly Westerns. He's got some pencil credits.
Yeah, it's all Westerns and Furies.
Oh, he's an old artist. He did he penciled Man comics back in the early 50s, which were like toxic masculinity to comic book.
Yeah.
It's all like manly men doing manly things.
Men.
We're men.
The ones in the order, what were they even in the order for?
I'm sorry, I can see SpongeBob and Patrick.
What even are they? Oh, they're like soldiers and cops and stuff. Yeah, I remember these now.
They're bad. Men, we can do anything.
This had a June 1965 release date and 20-page story. And of course, there's no synopsis for this, so we're going to win it. I will say the site, the mini site synopsis that they have here, the little blurb, is when faulty munitions nearly kill the Howlers, their investigation leads them to Czechoslovakia to rescue a hostage.
We have a synopsis. No. It's just not in the wiki. Ooh. It's actually on the CMRO.
That's the one I just read, isn't it?
That's the blurb I just read. Synopsis tab.
Oh, is there an actual synopsis? Oh, shit. Holy shit. That's magic. Okay, I'll read that then. Thank fuck.
I saw that when I was reading the comic.
I didn't. I don't really pay attention to the tabs, though, unless it's the comments, so I don't really...
I click through to read the appearances in the comments and usually look at the others to see if there's anything interesting.
I look at the appearances if there's, like, a new character sometimes, but besides that, not really.
That's
anyways,
probably good, because I constantly spoil when people are showing up next.
Yeah. I did look when the leader showed up next to the curiosity when we were talking about that, but that's about it. I don't like being spoiled that way. During an exercise, Izzy's explosives detonate before he even touched the radio trigger, which could have led to blowing up all his teammates. Fortunately, they were hiding in a ditch. Back at base, Captain Sawyer takes Fury to investigate who is responsible for not properly checking the equipment. The rest of the Howlers are given a three-day pass, so they head for London. As soon as they arrive, they meet McGivney and his men, who, as usual, are eager to get into a barroom fight. Meanwhile, Fury and Sawyer have a conversation with Dr. Senesh, the scientist in charge of the experimental radio trigger. The man announces he will no longer serve the Allies, and Sawyer deduces it has to do with his wife and daughter, who still live in Czechoslovakia. After Senesh reluctantly tells his family his last known location, Fury understands that he now has a new mission. He finds the rest of his team still fighting McGivney's men. When Fury informs them of the reason for his visit, they all leave the fight and head for the rescue mission. As they arrive near western Czechoslovakia's border, they intercept some Nazi officers, and Fury and Minnelli take their uniforms to infiltrate the nearby German base. After meeting with the Nazi general on post, their cover is blown and the commandos easily subdue their enemies. The general is forced to reveal the location of Sinister's family in a prison camp about 50 kilometers from the base. The team manages to get into the camp and Fury frees Sinister's daughter, who tells him that her mother recently died in the camp. They all get... it's actually, like, it's surprisingly handled well in this comic also, like... like, if there's a little bit of tinge of, like, oh, damn, when that happens.
Yeah.
They all get away from the camp, but the plane which is supposed to take them back to England is shot down by a never-Nazi Messerschmitt? Messerschmitt? I don't know how to say that.
Messerschmitt?
Plane. They have no other choice but to catch a German freight train which just happens to pass by. But as fate would have it, members of the French Resistance blow up a bridge as the train passes over. Realizing they are on the same side, the French decide to help the commandos get Sinister's daughter back home and provide them with equipment. Once they set foot in Paris, Fury uses an enemy airwave to send a coded message to his superior. Back in England, Sawyer intercepts the message and sends a pickup boat. But again, the ticket across the channel is spotted by a Nazi boat. However, this time they are able to outmaneuver it and finally make it to the English coast. After the doctor the grammar is not perfect on this. It's like the Marvel Wiki.
Most likely this was written by someone who didn't have English as their first language. A lot of the like hardcore contributors to this site have English as a second language.
After Dr. Sinish is reunited with his daughter, he vows to devote his life to avenge his wife's death and to help put an end to Nazism. As the Howland Commandos are given a night off, the first thing they set out to do was taking care of unfinished business with McGivney and his men. The end.
Right.
If that missed anything, I don't remember. I don't think it really did.
It got all the key points anyway.
Yeah.
This was a really good Fury.
Of course, this is the one you think's really good, and the site average is a 2.9.
I mean, I gave it a 3, but
I gave it a 3
problem,
too.
Yeah, the problem with the last couple that I ran into, is they were too small scale. Like, it's just the Howlers attacking one fort or so. The Howlers are at their best on a case like this, where they go on a whole long mission, and so the fact that they beat every single challenge really easily kind of still has action and flow to it, whereas the last issue it just felt like they were beating guys up for like 10 pages straight with no plot advancement.
And that's where you and I
had somebody who was a scientist and was working for the bad guys, but then realized they were.
And that's where Bill
that's
and I
a
differ.
New idea.
Yeah, because Bill, because well, Bill likes more like one like this where it's the one bigger mission and blah, blah, blah. I can overlook the smaller mission, but give me more of the emotional storytelling that some of the latest ones I've been doing.
Ones were they only had like 2 pages of emotional storylines, and then it was 10, 15 pages of Fury easily beating the same 6 Nazis over and over again because they didn't have any more to throw at them.
And that's a fair point, but I think considering the quality of a lot of the other stuff we're reading, that getting any kind of storytelling like that is pretty cool for me.
Oh yeah, the other comics had better moments. This was a more fun comic overall.
I will give you that. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that's the difference between yours and I's philosophies of how we view stuff, I think.
Yeah, you tend to analyze it a lot more than I do. Because you pick up a lot of, like, inconsistencies and stuff that I don't even notice because the story's rolling along nicely.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, solid comic here. It was a fun read. I mean, I like all these certain three issues. I think there's only one that I gave a two, so...
Yes, yeah. I struggle more with them than you do, because a lot of times I find they get repetitive.
Yeah. I'm sure later in the run they're going to be brutal to read, because I've looked ahead, but for right now I've been enjoying them.
I haven't. I've been deliberately not spoiling myself on anything that comes up with Fury.
That's fair. I only have because I've been doing my spreadsheet and stuff. But anyways... that was, yeah, good issue. Let's move on to the other Fury issue, the modern, this is, at the time, modern Fury, with Strange Tales number 136, DA story. This one is titled Find Fury or Die.
I would cite this as the better Fury for this week, too.
I mean, I gave them the same rating, but yeah.
So did I,
that's
because
pretty fair.
We only have five to choose from.
Yes. We don't have half stars or anything either. Stan Lee writing, of course. Jack Kirby and John Severin on the art. Cover arts by Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, because there's both characters that are spotlighted on this one. Letters by Sam Rosen, June 1965 release date, 12-page story. And I will also be taking this one away, because I'm a Fury hog. Nick Fury is on his way back to S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters when he realizes that Hydra has a tail on him and will assassinate him as soon as he reveals their headquarters. He calls into the barber shop to get them prepared, and when he arrives, leaves a note that the next two patrons will be Hydra agents. Back at Hydra base, a Hydra hunter sends the assassin squad into position and sends the two undercover agents inside. Fury captures them and hypnotizes them into believing they had succeeded in shooting him and that the barbershop isn't actually the headquarters but an old warehouse. Over at the warehouse, Hydra assumed they had discovered S.H.I.E.L.D.'s secret base. Fury lays a trap for Hydra and captures all the agents in various traps. Back at Hydra, the failed Hydra hunter is killed and replaced. That's a pretty brief synopsis, but...
It's pretty solid, though.
Yeah,
got all the main points everything. Because a lot of this was just showing off what S.H.I.E.L.D. can do.
Yeah, a lot of this is like, oh, look at all the stuff we've invented here, and all that jazz.
And while I said this one was the better Fury, there was one thing in it that really pissed me off. After they got the Hydra agents at the barbershop, they quickly changed the front of the shop to disguise it again into a hardware store. They took down the barber pole, and they put up, like, hardware store signs and stuff. And it's like, I think people who go by that shop every day would notice if it was suddenly a hardware store. It would be less conspicuous to just keep it as a barber shop, especially because in the next issue, they've already forgotten they did that, and it's back to being a barber shop for the rest of its appearances. But they
Dan's
made a big...
Like...
I have nothing to add to this. I literally... It's like, I'm just listening going...
This is only the second issue of the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. run for Nick Fury, so it's a lot of establishing.
Yeah, it's 60s spy stuff. Yeah. With all the 60s spy quote cliches.
It's pretty fun.
It is. I was just explaining to Dan what's going on.
Yeah. I remember... when that Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff was around, and it was just, yeah, it's just no, thanks, no. Right, cause
it's
Redman,
damn it.
Well, no, but I saw it on the comic rack, and I was just like, no thanks. There was nothing about it appealed to me.
To be fair, they have some pretty shit covers sometimes that wouldn't really drag you in.
You're right. The covers did not do anything to help.
Yeah, and honestly, with this comic, it really boils down to, do you like the campy 1960s style spy films, or don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's 100% a 1960s spy show.
Yeah. Yeah, and although, to be fair, some of the 60s TV spy shows were fun. But they weren't. They weren't exactly breaking new ground, with the exception of the Avengers.
Yeah.
Right. You know, Man from U.N.C.L.E. was silly, and it was a kick and a half. And then there was one with Bill Cosby and Tony Curtis. I can't remember what that was called. But, like, they were dime a dozen. Secret Agent, bam. And,
oh, yeah. And as always, Saints, Marvel chases the fads.
Yeah. And the Saints. And just, it went on and on and on.
Yeah. As we'll see in the 70s.
Yeah. Oh, it was just.
With the martial arts and horror comics galore.
Well, Bruce Lee's the
so
a
lot, bad.
A lot of that.
At least some good stuff came out of the martial arts one.
Yeah.
Iron Fist and Shang-Chi.
Yeah, I always liked Shang-Chi. I always did.
Me too.
Yeah.
And which, Iron Fist.
Which just
first.
Made the movie that much more disappointing.
I have some old Shang-Chi comics lying around here somewhere.
Yeah. I always liked the Shang-Chi comics.
And yeah, I liked them once they started doing the spy stuff. It got pretty tired before then.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just
like, it started strong, and they tried to do the, like, Kung Fu TV series thing with him just being like a wandering Asian mystic of indeterminate race because they don't want to say he's Chinese.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he just, like, wanders around and is wise and fights with people. And that was pretty tired. But then they brought into, like, spy elements, and it actually worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, let's move forward as we still have two comics to cover here.
And now we get to torture Dan.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the podcast. Amazing Spider-Man Annual Number 2, The Wondrous World of Doctor Strange. It's pretty much telling you right there that this is not really a Spider-Man comic. Stan Lee, of course, writing this bad boy. Well, kinda. Art by Steve Ditko. Inks by Steve Ditko. Cover art by
Stan
Steve Ditko.
Definitely wrote
I mean, Stan
this.
Writes it, but a lot of this
no,
is Ditko inspired.
Stan was responsible for a lot of this.
Yeah, well, it's why
because
it's so bad, probably.
Yeah, because a lot of the good stuff from Ditko's writing, even in Doctor Strange, isn't in here, despite this being a Doctor Strange comic.
Yeah, no, it's Stan's like, do what, we're going to let Steve do what he wants, but then, like, completely ruins it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Stan had a very tight leash on what was actually put into this comic.
Letters by Sam Rosen. Release dates August 1965, 20-page story. And Dan's going to take us away with this.
Oh.
Dan's first covering of a Spider-Man story. Spider-Man story.
Oh my God, it's a long story.
This is a historic episode of the podcast, folks. Strap in, get ready. Yeah. This is going to be incredible.
I got this. I can do this. Synopsis for The Wondrous World of Doctor Strange. Spider-Man is disappointed to find all quiet during his night patrol of the city. Oh no, how dare there not be people being murdered and killed? That's terrible. Right? I'd be disappointed too. Right? It's horrible that there isn't bad things happening to helpless innocent people. Move to Maine, you motherfucker. Anyway.
That's going to date this comic.
Oh, boy.
This issue.
Yeah, it really is. This one podcast, I just ruined everything. However,
we give Dan one Spider-Man comic, and he immediately makes a mass shooting joke.
He hasn't been on a regular podcast in like a fucking month or something. Fucking...
I may have misspoke. Okay, don't want to make fun of it. There are a lot of very, very, very devastated people out there. And my heart goes out to each and every one of them. Sincerely, it does.
I didn't even
Except
get that part
you,
of
Jeff.
It at first.
Fuck
I was
you.
Just laughing at the main.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I got right away that it was about the main shooting.
Yeah.
So I didn't even realize that part. Maine normally is pretty peaceful. That's why I was laughing.
Not anymore. It's no more peaceful than Nova Scotia now.
I was going to just make a Porto Peak reference.
Yeah.
I guess we are neighbors after all.
Well, we
Sorry.
Are in every way.
Sorry, I could. That was...
Hey, if this podcast is going to make fun of other people who are victims of mass shootings, I'm at least throwing us under the bus as well.
Yeah. Hey, we beat them to it, to be fair.
We did. We did, unfortunately. Anyway, to get back to the comic part of the podcast.
It's a good thing no one watches these.
Yeah, really. Boy, wouldn't we get trashed for that comment. However, elsewhere...
Our one viewer turns out to be from Maine.
Oh, my God, I would feel so crappy.
That would be horrible.
Oh, my God. I do mean it sincerely. My heart goes out to each and every one of them. This is horrifying what happened.
I mean, I feel bad anytime there's one, but they don't do anything about shit down there, so...
Well, the unfortunately. Thing is,
yeah, you kind of have to laugh or you're going to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're content to let it keep happening, and that just baffles me. It's like... I feel bad
for all our state's neighbors to...
Yeah,
begrudgingly
in the US,
go through this.
Make this stop. You know how
please
stop.
Reach out
just
to your local representatives and see how they stand on certain issues like that.
Yeah.
Like the gun laws.
Yeah.
Anyways, not to get political or anything.
Yeah. So, let's get back to the comic. However,
let's go back to discussing punching Nazis and other apolitical topics.
Yeah.
You bastards are dragging this out for me, aren't you?
Not even on purpose is the...
No, I can't help myself but making jokes.
Technically, this is your fault.
You brought this up.
I did. Everybody else was in pain, and now I'm in pain. A man named Xanadu interferes in a barroom brawl, where two muscular men have challenged everyone present to a fight. Xanadu hypnotizes them to feel no pain and gives them limitless strength to accomplish their task. To steal the other half of the Wand of Watoomb, of which Xanadu already possesses one part, from Dr. Strange's mansion. As they break in, Strange tries to distract them, but he's quickly knocked out. Okay. Too bad he wasn't like magic and could do something to defend himself. The two henchmen find the Wand of Watoomb and
he's not Scar the Witch.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Ow. That's cold. Although I'd like to see those two, Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch face off. That would be epic.
Yeah, couldn't that make a great movie?
It would be a great movie. What would Stan Lee have done about that?
Man.
I wouldn't even have screwed that up.
Oh, God, I even forgot that that was a movie.
Yeah.
And there is the biggest burial of the modern MCU right there.
There's the biggest burial of Multiverse of Madness this whole year.
Yeah, I forgot it existed.
It was so bad. It was just so bad.
Yeah, I was thinking comic Scarlet Witch versus comic Doctor Strange would actually be a pretty fun fight, and then I remembered a few minutes later that, oh yeah, that was actually a movie which you were referencing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like Ryan with mass shootings, just completely oblivious.
Anyway, they exit through a skylight, attracting the attention of Spider-Dude. Spider-Dude goes down fighting, having been unaware of their supernatural strength. So, he's got supernatural strength too. He's Spider-Man. He can do anything a spider can. But even as he collapses...
In this case, he chose to get stepped on.
Yeah. As he collapses, he plants a spider tracer on one of them. Must have got it from Batman. Xanadu receives a second half of the wand and reunites it. It reveals that with the complete wand, he can create doorways to other dimensions and times, as well as see any place or object he desires. Spider-Man now interrupts Xanadu.
Xanadu's a DC character, that's why.
Okay. Fair enough. I thought it was like a movie with Olivia Newton-John. And,
I was just going to make a reference
Gene
to that.
Gene Kelly. Yeah. God, Gene Kelly. His career just collapsed after that. Anyway, but is startled to find himself starting to disappear into an alternate dimension. He grabs the Wand of Watoomb, realizing its importance, and it goes with him. Xanadu sends the two henchmen after Spider-Man to get it back. As they fight, Doctor Strange regains consciousness and follows the henchman's traces to Xandu's lair. The two do battle as the henchman brings Spider-Man back to Earth. Xandu regains control of the wand of Wotumba and uses it against Doctor Strange, who, realizing he's overpowered by the wand, leaves his physical form and uses his electroplasmic spirit, kind of like Splooge Man, to aid Spider-Man. At Strange's suggestion, so they're using their made-up names. Spider-Man grabs an electric wire and shorts out the shorts out the two henchmen's hypnosis. Doctor Strange returns to his physical form and fights alongside Spider-Man, who trips Xandu with his webbing and retrieves the wand. God, this is tedious.
Yeah, it is.
The wand is then drained of its mystic power by Doctor Strange, who also wipes the memory, and thus the evil intentions, of Xandu. Are we done? Can I go home now?
Are we?
You're the one with the synopsis. You tell us.
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
Thank God.
I needed it to be over. Oh my God.
One of the rare times I agree with Dan on Spider-Man, I didn't think this was good. I gave this 2 stars.
I also gave this 2 stars.
I don't know how this is rated so high on the site, genuinely.
It's got like a 3.15. I think people are just excited to see Spider-Man and Strange in the same comic.
That's gotta be carrying a lot of it, because this really is not that good at all. Yeah, this is
nothing that makes Spider-Man Spider-Man is here.
Even Steve Ditko's art isn't as good in this.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he wanted to do it. Like I said, I'm pretty sure this comic directly played into the falling out of Stan and Steve. Because Steve probably wanted to do a Doctor Strange Spider-Man team-up.
Yeah.
And then Stan took it away from him and produced this crap and dumped it on his desk and was like, here, this, you got what you wanted. Are you happy now? And it has nothing that was good in Spider-Man in it. It has nothing that's good about Doctor Strange in it.
Right.
It's just...
pointless.
It is.
And he fights with the big tough guys for like 5 pages. They're just normal humans.
This is only the second Spider-Man annual, and it feels like a modern annual in a way where it's like...
Completely
pointless.
It's just
like a team-up, but it's really pointless. Like, it's not... Annuals shouldn't feel like this early. I feel
tied into the local current events, so that you feel like you have to buy it, even though it's 4 times the price of a normal comic.
Yeah,
the thing is, you're both right.
I might be bitter about modern annuals.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole point behind Spider-Man is a couple of strong guys shouldn't be able to take him out in any way, shape, or form because he's like a superhero.
And he's canonically one of the strongest superheroes. They established later on.
Yeah.
That basically nothing hurts him. And he usually just acts like he's getting hurt so that he doesn't give it away.
Yeah, but I mean, it was so pointless. Right?
No, this wasn't good.
There's
no way the plot should have played out the way it does at all.
He does. The worst thing for Spider-Man, the character that at this point is most known for having a supporting cast and stuff happening outside of their superheroing. There's not one panel where he has his mask off.
This is important for being the first time Spider-Man and Doctor Strange share a comic or whatever.
Yeah.
Besides that, the most important thing to come out of this would be the Wand of Watoom, because that actually does come back.
Yeah, the Wand of Watoom ends up being important. This comic...
Semi-important.
It turns up in some storylines later.
It's only like 7 more comics, but still.
Yeah.
Nothing in this is important enough for it to even get an essential tag.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just got the core tag because it's got Spider-Man and Strange in it.
Let's move on. Yeah, disappointing, but let's get going forward.
Yeah.
To a better annual.
And an actually important one.
Yes. And actually... pretty good one. I mean, it is a little repetitive, like Bill's going to talk about, but still.
That's not a strike against it, because I talk about the experience of reading them the first time.
Exactly.
Coming back to this was rough. But the first time, this was a really good comic.
Which the comic is Fantastic Four Annual Number 3. This one's titled Bedlam at the Baxter Building. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's baby, of course. Vincent Clidon inks. Cover art by Jack Kirby, of course. Stan Goldberg on colors. Artie Simic on letters. August 1965 release date. 23-page story. An extra 3 pages for you. And we'll let Bill take this away.
It's too bad we have no clue how good Stan Goldberg was as a colorist. Because reading this on Marvel Unlimited, we got the digitally recolored version.
Mm. And of course, I guess we should shout out that cover right away, considering what this is all about.
Normally, this would be a really bad cover, but in this one case, the completely cluttered Chaos cover works and actually helps sell what's in the comic.
Yeah, because this is the point of this comic.
Yeah, because spoilers, the gimmick of this comic is that basically every Marvel character shows up in it.
I'm glad Bill said basically, because there certainly are exceptions to
it. The Western characters don't show up.
And Hulk and Thor, I think, were the two big villains, or it was Hulk at least. And there was literally characters they shout out in the stories that don't show up. I had the whole list ready to go when we were...
Yeah, I think everyone gets a mention, but Thor does show up.
Thor shows
up. I don't remember Hulk.
It was Hulk and somebody else that were two heroes that didn't show. And
when I reread this for the podcast, I didn't finish it because the charm of it the first time does not survive repeated readings.
When I read it, I was listing it in my head of which characters didn't show up. One of the romance characters didn't show up while the other ones did, but they mentioned her by name.
Yeah.
I think it was Patsy that didn't show up in person.
No, Patsy's there.
Is it Hedy then? Maybe it's Hedy.
Yeah,
it's one
Hedy's
of them that doesn't
there.
Actually show. That's it.
But and it's hard it to name. Tell because they're Jack Kirby drawings of them, so they're all Sue Storm.
Yeah.
I mean,
literally.
Taking a shot
literally,
at that
Yes.
Millie
I think
is literally just Susan Storm because they're both blondes with about the same hairstyle.
Well, and I sent you guys the panel when I was reading it of the transition between, like, 3 panels between Sue and then there's Alicia.
Yeah.
They look exactly the same. So.
Anyway, enough shots at Jack for being unable to draw multiple women.
Yeah. For now.
Oh, yeah. It'll come up again. But this is actually good, and I don't want to bury it. Reading a newspaper announcement of Reed Richards and Susan Storm's wedding day, Dr. Doom plots to ruin it because he's a petty bitch.
Don't get teary-eyed.
By using his emotion-charging device to incite the entire supervillain community, whether or not the foes of the Fantastic Four, to attack the ceremony. A crowd has gathered outside the Baxter Building, where the wedding is to take place, to watch the celebrity guests arrive. Romantic. Just have your wedding at work. The onlookers include both Millie the Model and Patsy Walker. Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. are providing security for the wedding and prevent a guest whom the puppet master is controlling from poisoning the Thing. While the Thing is considering whether to tell Reed about the incident, Mole Man and his subterranean moloids attack from beneath the building. Professor X summons the X-Men to aid the Thing in warding them off. Meanwhile, Reed, Sue, and Johnny are attacked by the Red Ghost and his Super Apes, until the latter are banished to another dimension by the newly arrived Doctor Strange.
Which, this is the return of the Super Apes, by the way, because they had disappeared previously.
Yes. This issue's not super concerned with continuity.
No, it's not.
For anyone outside of the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four are concerned with no one else. And maybe Hulk. That might be why he's not there. I don't remember what's going on with Hulk right now.
I think it is. This issue, besides the Super Apes just randomly returning, is pretty cautious of continuity, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Because they even mentioned some of the...
I think this might be when Hulk is dead.
They mentioned the offense. I think they even mentioned some of the offense, like, going on with, like, Iron Man and stuff or something like that.
Oh, yeah, they used it to advertise the fuck out of the other comics.
Yeah.
With the initial attacks defeated, Doctor Doom increases the power of villains, including the Mandarin, the Black Knight, Kang the Conqueror, the Awesome Android, who's not, and the Grey Gargoyle to attack.
That's some of the characters that we're missing, too, is some of the Iron Man villains they didn't put in this.
Yeah. While on his way to the wedding, Thor is attacked by the Super Skrull. Daredevil spots Hydra agents attempting to collide a missile with the Baxter Building and succeeds in driving it off, dumping it into New York Harbor. The missile's detonation destroys an attacking undersea force led by Atuma the Barbarian. The arriving Avengers, Captain America and Hawkeye, battle the Cobra, the Executioner, the Enchantress, Mr. Hyde, and the Mad Thinker with the help of Spider-Man. While Daredevil is being chased by the Black Knight, assistance from the X-Men is interrupted by the arrival of the Mandarin, Electro, the Unicorn, the Melter, and the Beetle, whilst Quicksilver simultaneously battles the Human Top, because we had to bring back the really shitty one. These events rapidly culminate in an all-out battle between the heroes and villains until Reed Richards is summoned to the Watcher's Citadel, where he is given a device that will allow him to transport all the attackers away with no memory of what transpired. With the villains defeated, Reed and Sue are married. Outside, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby are turned away from the ceremony as they do not have invitations and leave muttering dire threats of retribution. I love that Stan and Jack threaten them when they get kicked out.
I don't always love the fourth wall bits with them throwing themselves in, but this was the perfect spot to do one of them.
Yes, this one was funny. A lot of times it's annoying, but this was actually funny.
Yeah. It was an appropriate spot to do it. I mean, looking at the history of comics, they like to just get stuck in certain parts and not let characters grow to a certain extent. So the fact that even so early in Marvel's establishing that we have Reed and Sue getting married and it's stuck for all these years and decades for the most part,
that's been pretty never epic. Been undone. They've had falling out and they've split up, but they've never been unmarried. It's never been like, yeah, that didn't actually happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, they can't even commit to the top character, Spider-Man, having any real growth. And people crave it half the time. So, it shows how strong this was at the time, and how it's pretty...
Yeah, the fact that they bailed on the Peter-MJ marriage was bad.
Yeah.
Although I like a lot of the stuff that's happened after they bailed on it,
they've done good with the shit that was thrown.
Yes.
Dan Slott, I know you have your issues with Dan Slott, but Dan Slott is...
He's done a lot of good stuff.
He did a lot of good with, considering he had his big run after a lot of controversial moments like that.
Yeah.
Had gone down.
I didn't like some of the choices he made. But I freely admit that's a taste thing, not a this stuff is bad thing. Like, I'm not going to tell people Dan Slott is actually a bad writer on Spider-Man. I just didn't like his run.
And your main issue was when he was
when he was the head of Parker business Industries, owner and stuff, it was so. Too Iron Man.
Yeah, exactly, which is pretty fair. But, I mean... Going back to the annual, it was good.
This was a fun annual for the first time through.
Honestly, I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought it would. I only gave it a 3. I expected to give it a 4 going in.
I gave it a 3, too, because, let's be honest, other than Sue and Reed getting married, which they've been teasing for an entire year, so we knew it was happening, nothing happens in this comic.
Yeah, it's not really a...
This isn't a comic you read for plot. This is a comic you read... for the fun of seeing so many characters in one place for the first time they've ever done a massive crossover like this.
It's a spectacle.
The nature of annuals has always been, though, that they're going to give you a story that's completely disconnected from whatever plot line they've got going at the time.
Besides modern annuals.
Well, modern annuals, it did change, but originally it was just meant to be some extra, free stories.
It's a bonus story, essentially.
This is what an annual should be. To shape the world.
It was just a lot of fun. They changed the status quo slightly, but if you didn't buy the annual, you don't really miss anything because you knew for the last year they were getting married.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. We've actually gotten a bit of each kind of annual that you can get with some of these annuals so far.
We've gotten each kind today.
Yeah, we've gotten the Meaningless team up, both with the Human Torch Spider-Man one from the Strange Tales annual, and then the one today, the Meaningless annual. One of them was kind of good, one of them wasn't good at all, really. We've gotten the actual important annual, with a weirdly important moment with the Amazing Spider-Man first annual, with the Sinister Six happening.
And the first two Fantastic Four were both massive continuity changes.
That's true, too. Then all the Fantastic Four ones have actually been important to continuity, but also you didn't necessarily have to, at least today's, you didn't really have to read.
The last two you did have to read.
Yeah. Well, we got the origin of Doctor Strange and stuff in the one of them, so that's pretty...
We got the origin of Doctor Doom was one of them, and then I think the other one was like Reed proposing to Sue.
Yeah. So yeah. So we've kind of gotten a taste of each of them. Of course, modern day ones are either you're getting something that completely isn't really important at all, or you get one that it's the middle of a story or the end of a story, or sometimes even the start of a story. It'll be like the start of a fucking event or something.
The other one was Namor.
Or yes, and the big invasion. Or in modern times, you get the mix of them where you get. You get a big annual that's like 80 pages, and then you get the first story as a main story that does tie into something that's going on at the moment, but then you get all these bonus stories.
It's almost always part of the current event.
Or just shit.
And then you get a bunch of bonus stories written by people that have no experience with the character, just trying stuff out.
One of the things I always liked about titles like Marvel Team Up and Brave and the Bold was the fact that they were telling stories that normally wouldn't be told, first of all, but also didn't disrupt the continuity of what was going on in the main titles. And, you still got a fun story, something different, something unusual.
I've actually been impressed with the later Marvel team-ups that I've been reading, how well they tie into continuity of both characters that are featured, or many characters, because they'll do... often their own, like, 4 or 5 part story with different people tagging in and out of it. And it makes sense. The first Marvel team-ups were terrible throwaway stories.
That's why I laugh, because Bill buried Marvel team-up before.
It's actually gotten decent, because Claremont's been writing it.
Well, there you go, that's why.
However, Marvel 2-in-1 continues to be absolutely terrible.
Yeah, but, I mean, the whole idea behind the title wasn't just to get something else on the rack. It was the same with the annuals. It wasn't just to get another comic on the rack for the sales. It was to just give you something new, something different from what you're currently ingesting.
I think the early Marvel team-up was, in fact, to just get something else on the rack for sales. Because it was just their two biggest, like, most popular characters with young people. Human Torch and Spider-Man, stick them in a comic together, whip out a story over a weekend, get shitty art in it, and jam it on the rack, and it's only like 30 or so issues in that it started becoming consequential.
Yeah.
And now they've got Peter Parker, the spectacular side of Spider-Man, for the jam more stuff on the rack side of things.
Yeah, there are way too many Spider-Man titles. But to be fair, there's way too many Batman titles, too, so...
And Wolverine. That's true. They did the same thing with Wolverine. They did it with Punisher.
They're bringing back the Elseworlds line for DC, and I think somebody said... I didn't actually look at what the lineup was fully, because it was around the controversy with that artist I brought up. And there was like 5 out of 6, I think, in the line were Bat titles.
Half of DC right now is Bat titles.
Yeah, I know. It's a little crazy sometimes.
Well, that shit started, what, in the 90s? They just started pumping out all these different.
The 90s broke the comics. The 90s broke how comics work because now they just rely on their big players more than anything.
Well, the success of the Dark Knight just created a monster.
Yeah,
and they didn't know when to stop. It was like the success of the first couple of Image.
It was the chain of events because the 90s started it. Then both Spider-Man and Batman had successful movie franchises that helped carry them to top.
They've toned back with the Spider-Man issue in the 2000s. In the 90s, literally, if you're trying to do a chronological read-through, it's like in the middle of an issue, Spider-Man will duck into an alley for a second and he'll go off and have three other adventures and come back and pick up the next panel because there's so many Spider-Man titles being written.
Yeah, and it got stupid. It was the same with it. It just got stupid.
Like, I love Spider-Man, and I'll freely admit there were too many Spider-Man titles.
Yeah.
Two is a good number for a popular character.
Batman.
I also love Batman. And I will agree with you, there are too many Bat titles.
Oh my God, there's just too many. And don't get me wrong, I love the Dark Knight stories. I just love them. They did some great stuff. But when you start
getting Batman is more of a newer issue than Spider-Man, because Spider-Man
Batman
was
started
more
in the 2000s, I find.
Spider-Man was more 90s. Batman was more like 2000s, 2010s.
Because I think during the 90s, there was only Batman and Detective for solo Batman stories.
I'm going to have to check that because I think there were two.
Think you're wrong. I think there was more than that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there
but
was
But it wasn't
more
like
that.
A crazy amount like today's numbers. I think four or something.
I know there was four Supermans in the 90s.
There's one that's on the tip of my tongue that I can't get out. Like, I know.
Well, Brave and the Bold, I think, originally was a Batman team-up title.
It was, but it was.
It didn't change to other superheroes. It was him and someone.
Yeah, it was basically Marvel team-up, but I think by the 90s it had started being other headliners as well.
Yes, Legends of the Dark Knight is one of the ones I was thinking of.
Okay, I forgot that one existed.
That was my, you know, sort of one of my favorite titles of all time.
Yeah. I mean, he was also appearing in Justice League and all the Justice League stuff.
Of course,
like Justice League Europe.
I deliberately didn't count Justice League amongst too many Batman titles, but one could case.
That's a team.
Yeah, one
book.
Can make a strong case towards counting them too, because Batman was always a key player.
He was. He was one of the
Justice League of
the
America
key player.
Justice League Europe. Blah blah blah. But yeah, I mean, fun tangent there. Anyway. But I guess we'll get moving to close this out.
Yes.
No best and worst this week this month because we didn't cover enough.
We only had two different episodes, so we'll have a bigger one next month.
They'll just get lumped into November.
Exactly. This is episode 63, by the way. I didn't say it at the top this time. Didn't even have a funny name for Dan. Fucking Meg hat looking bitch. I don't know.
I don't know.
I just threw something out there. Anyways, if you're watching this on YouTube, please do like, subscribe, comment.
Oh, hang on, before you close out, we need to tell people what we're covering next week. No, so I know what to
read. Oh, yeah, that's a thing
they
we
don't
do.
Care. They don't care.
We are, it's our all X-Men episode. That's what it is. It's X-Men issues 14 through 18, so five comics only next week because it's all X-Men, so that means it's going to take 2 years to read them, so.
Three of those X-Men are good.
Yes, three out of five. The first three. The last two.
I wasn't
going
to tell them which ones, so they'd have to watch the entire podcast.
Well, there you go. Sorry, guys. I'll let you know right now. Yeah, you.
and to be fair, the other two, by X-Men standards, are not bad. They're just not as good as the previous three.
Yeah, fair. But anyways, tune back for that. There is a lot of interesting and some fun stuff going on in this X-Men. Some very important stuff too, kind of. So tune back for that. I think we'll have a lot of fun talking about them because of the, first of all, change in quality and talking about some of the stuff that does go down there and where we had left off of characters before. But anyways, if you enjoyed this, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, even share if you'd like to if you watch this on YouTube. Also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course Spotify. If you listen to this on Spotify, check up, click the poll and let us know why the Commissar is your favorite fucking Avengers film. If you didn't check out, we did a bonus episode for this month for around Halloween, talking about movies, franchises, movies, horror movies we hated, horror movies in general, blah, blah, blah. Check that out. And also check out the Last Wrestling stream that Bill and I did for our WCW run. Anyways, we will see you all next time, and peace out.
Have a good one.
Guys.
See ya.